Welcome to the Speakeasy.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Speakeasy. I'm your host today, Kate Laetti, and I will soon be talking to Carol Borden, who is not only the host of the Cultural Gutter, but she is also the founder of the Speakeasy. I'm just waiting for her to call in. The Speakeasy is a cabal of interesting people, we hope we are interesting anyway, who are trying to get around sort of the usual ways of getting to the arts. Oh, we're having some technical troubles here. But Carol will be calling in a moment. The Cultural Gutter is a really great place that is devoted to what they call disreputable art. So they cover things like comics and martial arts films and all kinds of genre fiction, too. So there's a wide variety of things that that they have under their interest. The Speakeasy itself is a secret organization, I suppose we should say. And I think I have Carol on the line now.
Yep, you do. I've made it.
Okay. Hello and welcome, Carol. Say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
And now, are you calling in on an actual phone?
Yes, I am. On a cell phone.
Oh, well,
a pretty little
well,
cell phone.
Hopefully it will last. You sound so much more ladylike than I thought you would be. Maybe I'm just used to my voice, but you sound very sweet.
Well,
first,
I will punch people for you.
Okay, that's good. I mean, you have all of those martial arts skills. The fist of what's the greatest one? Iguana fist, is it? No.
We always have people trying to find mantis fist at the gutter. I don't know
mantis
why.
Fist. That's it. That's
yeah.
The one. Well, first I want to say, hey, this is great. We have radio.
Yeah.
But also, this is terrific. We're the first time we've kind of like met not online. So with real audio and things like that. Although I suppose we've had chances to hear each other. Oh, I don't know. I've had chances to hear me.
Yeah.
But first, the Speakeasy. I was stalling trying to explain the Speakeasy. What made you decide to start it?
Well, a couple of reasons. The first was that I've met so many amazing artists and writers and musicians and people just doing crazy art online that I felt like they should all meet each other and interact and come up with crazy things to do together. And the impetus was seeing a bunch of female friends just not getting the recognition and support for their art that they deserve. And I thought I would do something positive rather than get all wound up in resentment and bitterness.
It's so easy to do. It's been really great too that we just, you know, it's like having a little cheering squad, and we all need that. And I mean, it's kind of nice because some of the publishers that I work with, and I know that you have also worked with at least some of them, Fox Spirit Books, for example, they're really good about supporting each other and, you know, sort of saying, rah, go, you know, do it, you know.
Yeah.
And I
mean,
to my regret, I'm going to keep end up editing things and I'm going, no more. Wait, what was that idea you said yesterday? But it is hard. I mean, I think pretty much everybody could agree who is involved in creating whatever. It's so hard to get noticed. There's such a tsunami of stuff out there.
Yeah. And I've also, for the first time, publisher and Evil Overlord for the Cultural Gutter, we're taking guest articles, and we have in the past. Okay. But this is the first time that I haven't just had to chase people. We have people asking to submit. And all the people who ask to submit are white dudes. And
oh, God.
I can see how, like, not that they don't deserve what they get, because they're very talented writers, but I think women and trans folk are just so much less likely to think of even trying to submit to something like that. And then on the other hand, I can see how easy it is for publishers to just get trapped into publishing straight white dudes all the time because it's easy and there's plenty that are good. And
and they're trained to speak up on their behalf even when they're not especially talented or interesting.
Yeah. And I've never been in that position before, like that I could just end up with the gutter being entirely that, because it is kind of tiring and exhausting chasing people around. But I was hoping with the speakeasy, people would feel more like they could try doing things and more like they could be inspired by each other.
And there's not really the same pressure of this is public. And I know a lot of people, they create and then they're really afraid of getting any kind of negative feedback. And so it's like,
yeah,
well, you know, right now we're still kind of, we're going to fly under the radar. This is our first radio. So radio broadcast. So I'm sure it will take some time to actually, you know, find an audience, but it's so great to just try things. And I mean, it's one thing to sort of try things and put them back in the drawer. And it's another to say, okay, I've done this, I'm going to put it out there and at least get a response. Because even when you get really bad responses, and we all do, one-star review with GIFs, it's different when you actually complete something and put it out there.
Yes, yeah. And I've gotten to a point myself where sometimes a bad response is affirming in its own way, like not just, oh, I've done something really radical that freaked people out, but also, I kind of knew that. I need to go back and work on that. I was hoping people wouldn't notice.
That's true. And as a perpetually lazy writer, I'm really guilty of that. I totally rely on my editors to fix the things I'm too lazy to fix. Oh, you used the same word three times in that paragraph. Could you fix that? Oh, yes, I guess I will.
Damn it.
Curse you. I mean, it's part of the reason that the process of it. I mean, I really like the fact that people can now sort of get things out direct to an audience, that they don't have to go through sort of the rigmarole of going through all the hoops. On the other hand, the steps have a real usefulness. I'm not a visual artist. I need somebody else to do my book covers for the most part if they're going to look good at all. I need somebody to edit my writing because I'm so incredibly lazy.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's such a boon to have things that wouldn't have got out there otherwise and can find an audience, however small, but to find an audience, and that there are other people out there who are like, yes, I really want to know more about Mantis Fist.
Yes.
The search to find it.
Yeah. Or actually want homunculi. Or...
or, you know, tweet along marathons with the drive-in mom. So there's so many cool events that I've already learned about from joining the speakeasy that I hadn't known about before, and artists and singers, and it's so exciting. I mean, every day I am cheered by my Space Cat catalog calendar.
Yes, it's so cool. It's so good.
It makes me smile every day. I have it in the bathroom. The bathroom is sort of a monument to kitsch. So I've got a nice, it's not a Keen, but it's a Keen-esque painting of a little drummer girl in there too. So it's like, it's in fine company there.
Yeah. Mine is in my office with my Victorian Cthulhu portrait. One of those
profile. Does he have a cravat?
I will walk over and look. He has a top hat. He is wearing a great coat. I can't tell if he's wearing a cravat or if those are his feelers.
Oh, well, that's a difficult question with Cthulhu. I have a crocheted Cthulhu up on my shelf here in my home office, and made by my friend Jan Kozlowski. And I'm surrounded by like book covers by fabulous people like Stephanie Johnson and others. So it's always inspiring. I mean, I think that's a useful thing, is to like going, put your successes around you and other people's cool stuff. So you go, crochet suits, go for it.
Yeah, and Victorian Fit was done by another Speakeasy member, although she hasn't really talked to anybody yet, but Edie from EJP Creations.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of things, and we'll have to, well, in upcoming, our plan is in upcoming episodes, I guess we should call them, that will have lots of people coming forward and talking about the stuff that they do and trying to make other connections so that we can find the interesting audiences there are out there for us weird folk. But can you tell us a little bit about, first, how you got involved in the Cultural Gutter?
I used to do a zine called Monstress that I hope to do again. And I was at a zine and small press fair when Jim Monroe, who used to edit the Cultural Gutter, came up to me, bought a bunch of my zines, and then came back up to me about 20 minutes later and asked me if I wanted to write for them.
Excellent.
So my first article was about the Ed Brubaker Catwoman from the early aughts, and then I did one about Godzilla, and then they hired me on to write about comics. And then he decided that he was tired of being publisher. He likes to start things and move along and start another thing. So now he's doing game design and filmmaking.
Oh, cool.
He wrote a bunch of books for Harper's and decided that he didn't like going through the publishing system anymore and set up a whole thing called the Media Kings to help people learn how to publish on their own.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so
that's
he left and publisher.
Well, I always enjoy your writing about comics because you usually pick up on interesting ones that I haven't read, and so mm-hmm. and a lot of them that are sort of outside the mainstream. Although you bring really interesting analyses to mainstream comics too. What are some of the most recent things you've written about?
I most recently wrote about a bunch of comics for Dynamite Entertainment. And they specialize in licensed comics and comics with sexy ladies. And I was writing about them because I was surprised that I was reading 4 comics from them at this point and was excited by their future comics when they're kind of disreputable in the comics world. Comics fans tend to look down on licensed television properties and comics that are explicitly erotica as opposed to sort of tacit, that's not sexy. She needs to wear that outfit for superhero reasons. Or what used to drive me crazy in Star Trek Voyager, where 7 of 9 had to wear her medical corset and her medical platform shoes.
That's bizarre. Sorry,
I
just got distracted by opening the chat room. But I sort of... It's funny because I know 7 of 9 mostly from, like, I have to say, mostly women's attraction to her. I know men like her too, but that there's a whole things I'm introduced to, slash fiction and fan fiction. But there's apparently a huge body of stuff devoted to her. So I only kind of know her almost as this kind of fetish object because I haven't really seen. I haven't seen many episodes of the show. It's like most things, like, oh, yes, I've heard a great deal about the show and the way people talk about it, but I haven't actually seen the show. It's probably good for most programs because I'm not, I don't know, I don't watch a lot of television on the whole, so I miss a lot of things. But it's really interesting. Well, I suppose that's my interest. The way people take these, you know, objects that have been created for a specific commercial purpose and repurpose them for their own ideas. And that seems like, in part, maybe the appeal of, like, licensed comics.
Honestly, it's not all that different from the people who get very into the continuity of Marvel or you know, the history of DC, the whole appeal of this like living universe, but what's kind of really going on is they essentially have licensed characters that they allow other people to use. So I find it kind of intriguing that people feel this difference between them very strongly that I don't. That, you know, there's something profoundly different to them about people writing Superman or people writing X-Men than there is about people writing Shaft or people writing Sonya.
Yeah, it's funny the sort of valuation that goes in there, but I mean, it's I was saying just the other day, probably on Twitter, say all of the random things that occur to me, that it's like in every fandom there's like that layer of anoraks, which is I probably shouldn't use a term like that because it's very obscure, but you know, people who are really 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 obsessive completists. And I was thinking of this because I joined a Facebook group devoted to J.G. Ballard. And it's like, It's so interesting that, you know, here's an esoteric group, and yet still there's a difference between the, like, sort of general members of the group and then, like, the real anoraks. They're like, you know, exhaustive detail of every, but you know, it's like every cigarette that he smoked and every place he touched. And it's like going, wow. It seems odd to me, but there's in any kind of fandom, there's that strata of people who are that obsessive. But it's like all fandoms have that same sort of shape, and so it's interesting that everything has to be hierarchies. I know, capitalism, patriarchy, blah blah blah. That people get taught to say, well, you know, this is better than that. It's like, well, why can't you just say, I like that and I like that?
Yeah,
but it does. Yeah. It does enter into these kind of discussions of fandom. I'm sorry, I haven't liked talking too much. I'm just letting you talk.
Oh, no. I was talking too much. We're having a lady
off. No. This is the thing. Women often wonder if they're talking too much. There are far too many men who that thought never crosses their mind. I know, I've been in meetings with them.
I was thinking, I think there is more of the kind of hierarchy and structure you're talking about in nerddom than there is, or in fandom, than there is in sort of other pursuits. Like, it's sort of like there's that structure and they just put different skins on them. So this is the, I don't know, the hard science fiction fandom skin over the structure, or this is the comics fandom skin over the structure. And I think some of the hostility they've been having towards, say, cosplayers is because they really feel like that structure is under attack, but they're not really aware of it. They just have the sense that you're doing it wrong. You're putting the character ahead over the primacy of the text. And
that's a good
coming
point
into
there.
Coming into it from like Justice League Unlimited and cartoons rather than from old comics. And
this is wrong. You can't do it that way.
But I know.
Yes, it's interesting how much that's an issue, that you're doing it wrong.
I know. And it's kind of crazy, but it's real.
I suppose in a way that there is this kind of hunger for a sense of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's about that. It's just these are the rules and you're bending them. It's more like that sort of childhood thing of saying, that's not fair.
Yeah.
You told me you only get to move six spaces if you roll a six.
Yep.
Fair.
Yep.
It's a lot of people feeling
that people really feel, you know, it's not like they're making up, that it's upsetting to them. But I'm not going to stop because of that.
Well, I mean, I think it was. I don't understand people who get upset about fan fiction, people who get upset about cosplay, because it's like, oh my God, could you imagine a greater compliment than somebody's like, I want to live in your world?
Yeah.
This world's made up out of your own little head.
Yeah.
But a lot of them get really upset and. I mean, part of it is just I'm sure the interference of lawyers, but how cool is that? It's like, I made these things and people are taking it and then running off and playing with them. And it's like,
yeah.
How much better does it get? Play in my world.
I don't know.
'Cause, I mean, for the most part, I mean, when I create stuff, I want to create my own stuff. I don't want to live in somebody else's world. But on the few occasions that I've done it, it's because it's like, oh, yeah, I love this world. This is so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So what else are you obsessing about at the moment at the Cultural Gutter?
I am thinking about, I'm obsessing about two things. One, I've had like a long-term obsession with Justified. And it's
don't
wrapping
tell me
up.
Anything. I haven't seen the recent series.
I won't. I was just thinking
I
more.
Love
I think a lot about Whelan, and I think a lot about Boyd, and I think a lot about the doubling in the show. And
oh, yeah.
I think a lot about Raylan's self-delusion versus Boyd's self-delusion.
Well, that's a great topic.
Yeah, yeah. And I talk about it every week with our screen editor, Alex. We watch it together. And he wrote about it a while ago, so I'm thinking in April I might finally write about Justified myself. But
now, No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say I'm also thinking about writing Vampire Prosecutor.
I love the screen grabs that you share all the time. That's, now, is that something that you could get like through Netflix or Crunchyroll or something?
You can get it through Crunchyroll, and you can get it through Hulu. I don't remember if it's on. I have Hulu Plus right now through a friend, but I don't know if it's regular Hulu or Hulu Plus. And then Netflix has season 2, which I'm just about to start.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So explain a little, because I'm sure people won't be familiar with it. And I only know sort of a little bit because I see you post about it all the time. Explain Vampire Prosecutor.
Okay. Vampire Prosecutor is a South Korean show, a TV show, about a man who, he isn't really clear on how this has happened, so part of the mystery is figuring out how he was turned into a vampire. And who turned him into a vampire?
He just woke up one day and...
He woke up at the scene of a car crash. He was chasing down a suspect, because the other part about it that's really interesting is prosecutors are very active in the Korean legal system. So he is a prosecutor who is a vampire. And he saw... crimes every week while trying to figure out how he's become a vampire and who did it and why.
And now, do the crimes are just sort of regular sort of crimes, or are they usually something unusual?
They're usually pretty unusual. Like, I wouldn't say that they're Hannibal level, but they're Hannibal-ish. It's pretty graphic as a show. Most of the crimes are murders.
See this hand? I put it to you that you made this.
I know.
Is it very, very serious, or do they kind of play around with the humor of it, or?
It's pretty serious, but it's very well written, and they do play around with the humor of it. So he does try to conceal from people that he's a vampire, and it's kind of difficult because one of the things he does is in his commitment to justice, he will drink blood samples from the victims, and then he will see what they saw at the time of their death.
Ooh, well, that's
and
a real advantage.
The medical examiner has noticed that he's going through a lot of blood samples.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Run to me.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. I find it very enjoyable.
I've noticed that a lot more people just broadly, and I think a lot of it is because of Hulu and Netflix, so a lot more people are watching Korean television series, and they seem to be really bringing up a lot of interesting ones.
Yeah.
There's a lot of romance ones, too.
Yeah, yeah. I watched A Gentleman's Dignity. about 40-year-old men who were having a midlife crisis and falling in love. And I found that one quite entertaining. And I watched part of Secret Garden, and I'm supposed to watch the rest of that with Beth Watkins from Beth Loves Bollywood. Because I was telling her the Korean romance melodrama.
That's right. And we should mention, she's in the is it The Guardian? No, Time Out.
Time Out.
Has a big, yeah. The 100 best Bollywood films.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, she got to write about 10 of the films in their 100 best films.
Excellent.
Yep. And she used to write for, she writes, I think, occasionally for the Times of India. And then she used to write for the Wall Street Journal's Asia film blog.
Wow.
But you can always find out what she's doing at Best Loves Bollywood.
Is that on Facebook?
It's on Blogger. She says that she refuses to have a Facebook page for it because Facebook blocks Blogger.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, often if you try to go and look at a Blogger thing, it will make you, it'll say, this is a sketchy site. You better prove you're a human or say you want to go.
Oh, yeah,
through.
You don't want to go there. Stay away. Well, they keep changing. I know my other publisher, Tiergar, they were complaining because the blog would feed to Facebook and it would never post the pictures. And again, it seems like it's a way they're kind of trying to keep you away from Blogger. Even WordPress, it has like some weird, funky things that it's like now you have to have kind of you have to play with the coding so that there's a featured image that will show up.
Yeah.
And even if you go back and change that, that's the only one that will show up.
Yeah.
So sometimes they put placeholders in and it's like, oh, can't fix it. Okay, we should make sure to say the address for the Cultural Gutter, which is?
It's theculturalgutter.com. And you can find stuff about comics, movies, video games, romance, all kinds of stuff. And right now we have a guest article by Caitlin Tremblay. It's about Star Trek The Next Generation and the importance of friendship in her recovery from emotional abuse.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And you're also on Facebook?
Yes.
And people can just search for Cultural Gutter?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and we're on Twitter as at Cultural Gutter.
And you, in addition to just pointing to all the different articles that now, are you officially part of the tweet along with the drive-in mob, or is that just something you do for fun?
I'm one of the three bosses and like one of the founding folk.
One of the bosses. The
yeah. Yeah, we're capos. That's what we call ourselves. And then on the WordPress site, we're boss one, boss two, boss three.
Oh, I just got there's 90 seconds left. So one last thing you want to say about the idea of the speakeasy or about disreputable art in general?
I hope that the speakeasy and disreputable art have a long and fruitful relationship.
That's perfect.
Yay.
We're already like working as a secret cabal. Trying to figure out what we'll do next. But what I should say before we end our first episode, which is in its last minute, is that it's a guerrilla podcast. It will come when we let it know, and we'll probably be starting a public Facebook page so you can keep track of things and find it easy to schedule. But you can follow us on Blog Talk Radio here. It's blogtalkradio.com/speakeasyradio. Or you can follow Cultural Gutter on Twitter and on Facebook. You can follow me. My website is kalaity.com. I'm also on Twitter as Kate Laity. And that's pretty much it for our first episode of Speakeasy Radio. I hope you can follow us along on this journey. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye. All right, that was the end of our episode. Are you still there?
Yep, I am.